Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about September 6th, 2024. Headline: LD9 Democrat defends Senate seat against same GOP foe. Written by Hannah Elsmore and published in the Arizona Capital Times on September 6th. 2024. The race for the Legislative District 9 Senate seat is a rematch between former police officer Robert Scantlebury, a Republican, and incumbent Senator Eva Birch, a Democrat from Mesa. But a GOP consultant said the competitive district will favor the Democratic candidate who garnered national attention during the recent legislative session. Birch, a newcomer at the time, defeated her Republican challenger in 2022. Scantlebury, a former Mesa police officer, lost by more than 3,000 votes. His bid for the seat comes on the heels of a legislative session where Birch garnered national attention for sharing her experience with needing an abortion due to a non-viable pregnancy. Birch played a key role during the 2024 legislative session in the Democrats' effort to repeal the state's near-total ban on abortion that would become state law after the United States Supreme Court ruled that Roe v. Wade was no longer valid. Birch is a nurse who has focused on healthcare-related issues since taking office and said her experience as a nurse has highlighted issues that are close to her. If she is reelected to the Senate, Birch said one of the first bills she plans to reintroduce would be one to lower the cost of prescription medications for Arizonans, widening the scope to include those who are not Medicare patients. Quote, "Healthcare expenses are certainly high on the list of what people are paying for that keep them from being able to meet the needs of their families," Birch said. She said healthcare affordability is part of the bigger issue of the cost of living in Arizona. Housing cost is another high priority issue in her district, which covers much of East and Central Mesa, and finding permanent solutions will require bipartisanship, she said. Quote, "There's never going to be a bill that specifies everyone and all the stakeholders, so if we want to get them housing-related bills across the finish line, we need to have the right leadership in place in the House and Senate that will not obstruct the legislation for arbitrary reasons." Reining in the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts program would be another step to take to improve Arizona's economy, Birch said. An enrollment cap, with some exceptions, would help balance the state's budget and allow more spending in public education, she said. As the incumbent prepares for her general election rematch with Scantlebury, her image has become closely tied to the pro-choice movement, particularly through her backing of the proposed Arizona Abortion Access Act, which seeks to legalize abortions up to fetal viability in most cases. After making national headlines for sharing her abortion story on the Senate floor, Birch said she is feeling even more passionate as she knocks on doors and hears from constituents who share similar experiences. However, she warned that voter approval of the pro-abortion proposal in November should not be the only thing motivating Arizonans at the ballot box. Quote, "I can't stress enough how important it is that we have pro-choice candidates in the legislature and we have pro-choice judges, because the constitutional amendment is not going to be the end of the story in Arizona." On the other hand, Scantlebury's campaign has focused on border security, public safety, school choice, and lowering the cost of living. The Republican candidate has taken a similar approach in this campaign as he did 2 years ago. When it comes to housing affordability, Scantlebury wants to remove regulatory guardrails for homeowners, according to his campaign website. Quote, "Neighborhoods are often harmed by the presence of Airbnbs or homes that are converted to businesses," Scantlebury's campaign website reads. "With the right regulatory and economic policies, we will put ourselves, our children, and our grandchildren in a better position to succeed." Scantlebury had the endorsement of current United States Senate candidate Kerry Lake during the 2022 election cycle and has the backing of the Home Builders Association and the Mesa Police Association. His bid to unseat Birch has brought in $10,000 in donations from the Freedom Club Political Action Committee, and his on-balance is slim in comparison to the incumbent. Scantlebury has $29,931 on hand as of pre-primary campaign finance reports, while Birch held a significant lead with $130,081 on hand. GOP consultant Chuck Coughlin said Scantlebury's luck in the race is slim to none. Quote, "It's not possible," he said, noting that the competitive district has turned even more blue since the 2022 election cycle. Coughlin said the presidential election will increase turnout from young voters, further stacking the odds against Scantlebury in the district that favors Democratic candidates by a 2.6% margin, according to the Independent Redistricting Commission. Though the district is considered highly competitive, Scantlebury does not have the same appeal that a more moderate GOP candidate could have, he said. Quote, "I think the people representing the district right now are reflective of what that district is," Coughlin said. "Republicans keep running MAGA-esque candidates that can't appeal to that district. I just don't see it." Scantlebury did not respond to multiple requests from the Arizona Capital Times for an interview prior to our deadline. Headline: Regina Cobb blending all her talents in a new role. Written by Jacob Thorington and for the Arizona Capital Times and published on September 6, 2024. After 8 years serving in the House of Representatives, former Republican Representative Regina Cobb now finds herself as the Arizona Dental Association's executive director, carrying her knowledge and experience of lawmaking into her lobbying position. In a recent interview with the Arizona Capital Times, Cobb discussed her experience at the legislature as a House Appropriations Committee chair and how it differs from her observations of current lawmakers. The questions and answers below have been edited slightly for style and clarity. Question: Do you miss being in the legislature at all? Answer: There are times I miss it. I love policy. That's what I really wanted to do, was to represent my district, and I love the people of my district. I still get to do some of that policy part because I'm our chief lobbyist, so I work with some of the issues in medicine and dentistry. Question: What got you initially interested in public office? Answer: From the time I was 18 years old, it was more exciting for me to get my voter's registration than it was actually to get my driver's license. My parents were really involved in politics, not physically involved, but always knew the issues, knew who was running, and talked about politics within my family. What got me probably thinking about running for office was I saw a need of my state representative. She was also a patient of mine at the time. She's no longer alive. I saw the slate of people that were going to run, and I felt like I could do a better job than any of them. It wasn't good timing. I had thought about doing it later in my career, but not something at that moment. That opportunity happened at that moment, and I decided I was going to take it. Question: What's your favorite moment while you were at the legislature? Answer: I was really excited to get kids care passed. I think that was a goal of mine when I first started in the office. When the cuts happened, it shouldn't have happened. I'm a children's advocate. It was a difficult moment for me because I had to go against my party. I probably gave up political capital for about a year, which is fine. I kind of got a year where I can get my feet beneath me again and kind of regroup. Question: What's budget season like as appropriations chair? Walk me through the process. Answer: It's hectic all year long if the appropriations chair is utilized the way they're supposed to be utilized. I know the last few years it hasn't been that way. Speaker Toma and President Peterson have pretty much done all the negotiations. During the summertime, I would meet with all the agencies and the departments and go through their budgets. I also met with lobbyists and different organizations to get the lay of the land. Probably in September or October was my time that I would spend mostly with the members as they start filtering in at that point. In January, you hear what the governor's preliminary budget is. One thing that probably irritated me more than anything is the governor's budget would always come out before the House's budget came out. When the governor comes out with a preliminary budget, it's setting everybody up for failure. They keep saying, "This is what we're going to get." The normal negotiations shouldn't be that way. This is a sore spot for me because one of our priorities, and especially the first year that I was the appropriations chair, was to pay down the debt. When the governor refinanced instead of paying down the debt, I got a little irritated with that because that took away one of our priorities. We did end up doing that a few years later. Senator John Kavanaugh was the chairman in the Senate, and he probably had more time negotiating with me as vice chair in the House when I was there than he does as chairman in the Senate now. That's sad because he had a lot of knowledge and brings a lot of history to the process. Question: do you think that's a product of the direction of the legislature has been headed toward, or is it due to operating under a divided government? Answer: I think it's because they're operating under a divided government. The House, the Senate, and the governor's office all want that control. I think that's how it changed, because we weren't divided before. We all knew we were playing a dance, and we knew we were going to have to dance with each other. They don't necessarily feel that way, and they feel like they could get a budget done, but they're not going to get all the things on either side they want. Question: what's the toughest part of being a legislator? Answer: making decisions and being able to look at yourself in the mirror the next day and know that you've made the right decision. Even if it goes against what everybody else believes you should do, I'm representing not only my constituents, but I represent myself too. Sometimes what was difficult is making those really tough decisions and knowing at the end of the day that I'm going to receive some type of punishment. If I go against my party, then I'm going to have to answer to my party. Question: we're about to get a new wave of legislators after the election. What would be your advice to someone who's just been elected to the Capitol for the first time? Answer: sit back and watch for a while. I took this advice, sitting back and observing the situation without going in and thinking you know everything. I knew dentistry. I had been doing it for 30 years, negotiating the bills, figuring out how to get them passed. The chess game that you play to get your bills passed was all a learning process, and it took me probably 2 or 3 years before I really learned that whole process of how it goes. One of the best things I did was I told myself I'm only going to sponsor 10 bills for the next few years, and I actually kept that. The only reason I would go over that in later years is because being the appropriations chair, I always had to sponsor all the appropriation bills, and I always had some technical corrections in my pocket. But if you look at my first years, you'll see that I only would usually sponsor right around 10 bills. Also, time management. That was a big deal with me. My first year gave me an unreal expectation of how long a session really lasts. I think was like 56 days or something and ended around the beginning of April. That's 2 to 3 months ahead of where they're ending sessions now. Question: it must be maddening now with some of these little breaks lawmakers are going on later in the session. How do you plan around that? Answer: you are not allowed to even schedule anything. I was told that right in the beginning you are going to be on the floor and you better not schedule your vacation until after June. Now they're scheduling vacations like in May. And I'm thinking this is not what our legislature is supposed to be. They're supposed to be there at all times. I mean, one of the reasons that they do this legislative immunity for traffic things is to make sure that our legislators made it on time. Now you're taking vacations for 2 or 3 weeks. This is ridiculous. I mean, it shouldn't happen. I wish they would get back to where they were before, because I don't think we missed days. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Ballot Measure Targets Citizen Initiatives Prior to Election. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on September 5th, 2024. A ballot measure crafted to allow legal challenges to the constitutionality of voter initiatives before placement on the ballot is poised to upend decades of case law if it is approved in November. Current court holdings only allow courts to strike down ballot initiatives from citizens based on failings in form, like a violation of the single subject or separate amendment provisions, or for signature requirements, and prohibits assessing substantive violations of the United States or state constitution until after the election. Proposition 136, referred to the ballot by the legislature last session, would open the door to legal challenges during the signature gathering process and allow the court to weigh in on the true constitutionality of ballot initiatives before a measure heads to voters. Supporters say the change would save time, money, and effort typically invested in getting initiatives passed, and would ensure that all measures that are placed on the ballot are constitutional. But opponents contend pre-election litigation could mount high costs as groups simultaneously gather signatures and fight in court, and could stymie investments in initiatives altogether. The legislature passed Senate Concurrent Resolution 1041, sponsored by Senator J.D. Mesnard, a Republican from Chandler, along party lines, and transmitted the measure to the Secretary of State's office in June. The measure allows for challenges to the constitutionality of citizen-proposed ballot measures within at least 100 days before the election. In unveiling the measure to the Senate Elections Committee in February, Mesnard said challenges inevitably follow ballot initiatives, but the current process leads to an adverse result after efforts to see the measure through. Quote, "It's a lot of disappointment," Mesnard said, "and that's following hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars and lots of time spent advocating, getting them passed, only to find out that they were unconstitutional." He deemed getting litigation out of the way beforehand the lesser of two evils. Quote, "If I were them, I'd rather know earlier in the effort that this thing is going to go south," Mesnard said. Greg Blackie, lobbyist for the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, supported the measure through the legislature. He says the measure works to, quote, "protect our ballot from unconstitutional measures." Quote, "From our perspective, voters have a right to presume what is being put before them on the ballot, that it is constitutional. And so it's kind of confusing and could be a disappointment to vote on a measure only to see it struck down after the fact," Blackie said. "It's a lot cleaner to get it resolved on the front end." As it stands now, ballot measures can face constitutional challenges before the election, but only on form requirements for bringing an initiative to the ballot, the number of valid signatures, and the language in the 200-word description. The precedent against considering substantive constitutional challenge was established under a 2006 ruling in League of Arizona Cities and Towns v. Brewer, a pre-election challenge to a proposed private property rights ballot measure claiming an alleged violation of the state constitution revenue source rule. In a unanimous decision, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the court could not weigh in on more substantial claims of constitutional violations, as doing so would disrupt the legislative process. Quote, "A fundamental component of the legislative process in Arizona is the right of the people to offer legislation through an initiative," Rebecca White Birch, the Vice Chief Justice at the time, wrote. "And just as the courts may not predetermine the substantive validity of the legislature's measures, so too must they refrain from predetermining the substantive validity of the people's initiatives, even if the legislation might conflict with the Arizona Constitution or state law." The same was held in 1997 in Winkle v. City of Tucson, a case concerning a city minimum wage ballot measure. Justice Stanley Feldman wrote at that time, quote, "Voter initiatives, part and parcel of the legislative process, receive the same judicial deference as proposals before the state legislature. Courts are powerless to determine their substantive validity unless and until they are adopted." And both cases harkened back to a 1914 opinion, State ex rel. Bullard v. Osborne, which held that giving courts the ability to, quote, "assume in advance the power and right to decide whether the proposed measure was invalid would be tantamount to claiming the power of life or death over every initiated measure by the people. It would limit the right of the people to propose only valid laws, whereas the other lawmaking body, the legislature, would go untrammeled as to the legal soundness of its measures. Such differentiation of power is expressly prohibited." In the years since, the same string of case law threaded through ballot measure challenges in the lead-up to elections. In line with case law, courts have waited until post-election to consider whether a measure is constitutional and taken up pre-election challenges on a limited basis. And under that system, those spearheading citizens' initiatives say they can better anticipate legal challenges and budget for the fees that follow. Stacy Pearson, lead political consultant for the Safe and Smart Arizona campaign to legalize marijuana, said campaigns prepare for the six-week gauntlet where the signatures and the summary and the traditional legal challenges occur. But allowing challenges to occur earlier, Pearson said, could keep campaigns in court for most of the election cycle and strain their resources on the ground. Quote, "Every dollar that an initiative campaign is spending in court, they're not spending communicating with voters," Pearson said. So doubling or tripling or even quadrupling the legal budget has a direct impact on the campaign itself. She noted, too, the vetting campaigns do ensure a ballot measure is constitutional, seeking review from both their own attorneys and the legislative council. Quote, "It's reviewed dozens and dozens of times before a voter is asked to sign a petition or ultimately vote for an initiative," Pearson said. Overall, Pearson said, the change carries a cost. Quote, "It just makes it more expensive," she said. "This doesn't provide better protection to the voters of Arizona. It makes sure that special interests are the only ones that have the funding available to use direct democracy." Headline: Green Party offers alternatives in ACC race. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on September 5th, 2024. A pair of Green Party candidates are running in the already crowded race for three seats at the Arizona Corporation Commission. Mike Cease and Nina Luxenberg ran as write-in candidates in the Green Party primary and will be on the general election ballot alongside three Democrats and three Republicans. Cease is a longtime member of the Arizona Green Party and has run as a Green-endorsed candidate in many Tucson elections. Luxenberg is a newer Arizona resident and a radiologist also based in Tucson. The two garnered 179 and 175 votes respectively in the Green Party primary and will have to contend with big vote-getters like Rachel Walden, a Republican candidate for the ACC, who received the most votes of any female candidate in the Arizona primary. Cease has a background in chemical engineering and has been a member of the Green Party since 1996. He said his priorities as a commissioner would include sanctioning Arizona companies with ties to Israel, pushing utility companies to transition to renewable energy sources, and stop mining companies from polluting groundwater. A ceasefire in the Israel-Palestine conflict is a priority for Cease and something he said he hopes to facilitate through ending partnerships between Arizona companies and Israel. He said he has decided to run for the Corporation Commission because he realized it can have an impact on a lot of the issues that Green Party voters care about, such as a ceasefire. Quote, the ACC touches on a whole range of core issues in the Green Party platform and Green Party values, she said. Luxembourg said she moved to Arizona 2 years ago from Florida and has fallen in love with the state and its nature. Her passion for the environment drove her to run for public office for the first time in her life. Quote, when I moved to Arizona, I joined the Green Party, Luxembourg said. I have always followed their tenets, their platform. Basically, it's people, planet, and peace, and I abide by all of that. Luxembourg said her top priorities are lowering utility costs, incentivizing solar energy, and protecting the state's water supply. One of her biggest concerns is the potential opening of a new mine near the Santa Rita Mountains in Pima County. Mining operations like the one near the Santa Rita Mountains are high priorities for many Arizona Green Party candidates, including Cease and the party's candidate for the United States Senate, Edward Quintana. Cease said he is also particularly concerned about the Resolution Copper Mine that has been threatening the sacred Native American site Oak Flat in eastern Arizona. While the Democratic candidates for the ACC have positioned themselves as the climate-focused slate and have received endorsements from environmental groups like the Sierra Club, Green Party candidates are the best choice for real solutions, Luxembourg said. Quote, the Green Party has always put people first, and we are concerned about implementing climate change solutions as quickly as possible, Luxembourg said. Cease acknowledged that he and Luxembourg face more challenges in their campaigns as Green Party candidates, especially after being excluded from a September 3rd debate hosted by the Citizens Clean Elections Commission. After some Green Party candidates said they weren't invited to the debates, Clean Elections said it instituted a new rule requiring statewide candidates to receive 1% of all votes cast in all primaries in order to be invited to a debate. That threshold is just over 12,000 votes, something Cease and Green Party candidates could never hope to achieve with their closed primaries and around 3,400 registered voters. Quote, it's devastating because that's an awesome opportunity for any candidate to get his or her message out there, Cease said. All Arizonans, regardless of political party, will be able to cast votes for Green Party candidates if they so choose, and Cease and Luxembourg hope voters will consider them when casting their ballots. Quote, this isn't voting for the lesser of two evils. That's how we're going to see change, Luxembourg said. It's not a question of, I don't want to support them because they won't win. Voting is one way to give our voice. So I think we should vote for our conscience. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff. Once again, my name is John Coe. Thank you for listening.